It's really been interesting to me this year in our capstone presentations, although students simply signed up for the date they wanted to present. But every week so far, the presentations have been related. So we've heard Brittany's voice, and now we're going to hear Pauline's voice. Let me introduce Pauline and her topic. Pauline Hoyt relocated to Harrisonburg in 2008 from New Jersey to attend seminary. She has a Bachelor of Science in Finance from Rutgers University in New Jersey. Pauline enjoys working in customer relations and would like to get a job in areas where she would learn more about that area rather than to read and study about it, which I think is probably a comment about being a student. Pauline is the youngest of eight children and is the adopted mother of a calico cat named Callie. Her interests include reading just about anything except science fiction. She also enjoys writing fiction and poetry. She loves to travel and hopes her next move will be to live near a beach. That won't be in Harrisonburg. Her capstone presentation is entitled, and I hope you can see some connection with what Brittany was doing, Church and Worship, Discerning a Ministry as a Nun. Pauline, come and share with us.
First of all, I'd just like to thank everyone who has come out today to listen to me, especially if you're not in the class and it's a requirement. But this is actually something that kind of fell in my lap as far as the subject. It started on August 27, 2013, when I was in my final seminary convocation, and there was an invitation that was given out about how the church can better reach to the nuns. And I was like, what's a nun? So the explanation is nuns are people who are like spiritual but not very religious. They might or might not go to church, or if they do, it's very sporadical. It's not necessarily something that they're actively participating in. And the biggest point is that they encounter God outside of the church. And as I was listening to that, it kind of started striking me that some of these descriptions fit kind of how I felt. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm a nun. So I wanted to like learn more, especially since graduation was coming up and it's like a time when you're supposed to be looking at what do you do after graduation, what type of ministry are you going to go into? And I just couldn't quite see myself in a traditional congregation. So I said, well, maybe if I learn more about this, it would give me another avenue I could look into. But before I could really accept another label into my life and being placed into another category, I had to find out what a nun truly meant. So my first task was to actually change the way I was thinking about nuns and understand it's nuns, not nuns. Because every time I heard the word, I just kept thinking about nuns. So anyway, my first thing was to kind of understand what are nuns really seeking? Why is that? Why is it important to them to not be in a traditional congregation? And basically, their main thing is that they're looking for an authentic engagement with Scripture, with God, and then how do you take that authentic engagement and apply it into your daily life, into the reality of today? One of the scriptures that is like their foundation is John 4:23-24. And you see it there, but the hour is coming and now is when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. And I found that interesting that they would select such a verse, because this verse is talking about Jesus speaking with the Samaritan woman by the well. And what he's actually pointing out is that the Samaritan people worship, but they don't really know who they're worshiping, whereas the Jews know who they're worshiping, but they're worshiping with symbolism. And I just found that kind of ironic, because here were the nones saying that we want authentic engagement and authentic experience with Christianity, and then they're worshiping, and many times, with symbolism. So it's like, what? I was still not really sure, what exactly are you looking for? So going on from there, though, I found it very helpful to start looking at some of the terminology. The first thing is that the Christian tradition itself is very evolutionary. And you see that throughout the history of Christianity. Just starting from, like, some of the examples, the Gentiles being accepted to worship with the Jews, that all are welcome. When the Catholic Church and Luther had their disagreements, you know, neither one of them were deleted. It just kind of evolved into something else. So when I started looking at the nones, the term emergence Christianity is what came up first. And that's kind of like the umbrella, because even within this, what we would consider a new movement that's really not new at all, there's actually some division in there already. So under this umbrella of emergence Christianity, there's emergent Christianity and then emerging Christianity. So I took a look at some more of what the two differences are. Basically, they're both essentially looking for that an authentic encounter with God. And they both kind of hold some skepticism towards the modern biblical critiquing of the scriptures, because they feel that that kind of points towards the humanness of the authors instead of the word just being divinely inspired. Some of the differences is that the emergent Christianity tends to be less patriarchal in its worship, more interested in the spirit being revealed rather than trying to put God into a box and into a logical order. Emerging Christianity, on the other side, while they might try to worship in different ways, they still tend to hold on to the traditional theologies and all of the biases that come with that. And what ends up happening is that they make the experience of worship then just another spiritual practice. So on Sunday, I practice church. On Monday, I might practice fasting. On Tuesday, I might practice whatever. So it's still not really, it's still this disembodied kind of, not an even flowing thing. So, but even under these two categories, you still have more divisions, which I found even more interesting. You have the neo-monastics, which are really, they live like intentional communities. They have like the common prayer, common study time. Their intent is really to be there to support each other, to help each other with the physical labors of creating the kingdom now. And then the house churches, they don't necessarily live in intentional communities, but they will meet together. They still tend to have ties with the local parishes or other religious affiliations. So they're still kind of sort of supporting those institutions, but they're still separate. And then you have the missionals, which are really just a network of individuals. They may or may not be connected with local churches. They may or may not attend these local churches and be actively participant in them. But they feel within themselves this call to a radical life of practicing and proclaiming the God's kingdom right now on earth. So they're the ones that will like get together, form a group, and go out into the community and do something, like whatever need might be there, they'll go out and try to fill that need. And then there's the hyphenated. These are the people that come from a traditional religion background, and they take whatever has been meaningfully, spiritually formative or just, you know, something that worked for them from that tradition, and then they blend it with whatever it is they're now finding is also spiritually and formatively meaningful to them. These are the ones that don't really want to break away completely from the old traditions. They just want a different way of doing it. So one way to look at them is kind of like conduits. They are what the common traditions flow through into this new emergence Christianity, and at the same time, their styles of worship also flows back into their traditional worship spaces. And these are usually where you find like traditional churches would start offering like contemporary services, because they still want to meet in what's considered the traditional sacred space. And then the next one was the most interesting one, the cyber church. And Second Life, I don't know how many of you are familiar with that, but it's basically a virtual community with avatars that represent human beings. And it tries to duplicate basically every aspect of life in this virtual community. So they have churches set up there that have their meeting times, and your avatar would go to church, and it allows for all the elements of confession, communion, preaching, prayer, discussion, you know, contemplative times, whatever it is that you need, it's all included in there. So your avatar gets up and goes and does whatever it needs to do while it's at the service. They've also started this where they have like coffee bars, where again, there's one church actually has it's a real church, and they have a real setting with this coffee bar, and then they kind of hook into the Second Life community so that other people on Second Life or by Skype or whatever can also join in and hear what's going on, so there would be preaching or prayer or whatever. And if you happen to be at the real church, then you can also get coffee and donuts and food and whatever else. So so anyway, I found that was really interesting. One of the biggest drawbacks is that it lacks the human intimacy part of it. But surprisingly, that's actually, that they're finding that actually that's something that the millennial generation that grew up in the virtual reality world and with technology, and so they actually prefer that, because this way they get their church on, but they don't have to actually interact with a human being. You know, they don't have to, that pressure of the face-to-face connection. So the other part I looked at then is Philip Yancey's book, Church, Why Bother? Because he had his own journey away from church and then back to church. And he basically said that what he found out was that church is really about people. It's not about the buildings. It's not about denominations. So I was interested to kind of hear his side of it now, because here was somebody pro-church. And he came up with four principles. Looking up, which is the worship of God, not focusing on the performance that's going on the stage. So he's saying that whether the performance is boring or interesting, you personally should be focusing yourself on God. And another book I read in God's Presence, N. Graham Standish kind of agreed with this, or disagreed, I should say, because he said everything in church should be done with intentionality of focusing the listener on having an experience of encountering God, so that you don't have to sit there and try to block out what's going on. You can actually enter into what's going on and still encounter God. The next principle was looking around. And this he was saying is that try to go to churches that are not, that don't have people that look exactly like you, but have diverse people, because then that gives the opportunity to learn from each other and to learn different styles of worship. And what he means by diverse is social, economic, ethnic, education, everything. And he said that this here also allows you then to see how the gospel is able to speak simultaneously to different people at the same time. And Sharon Huey, who wrote about alternative worship in the Free Church tradition. I like the quote that she had. It says that the songs, prayers, affirmations, and sermon must be big enough to include a needy world, not just a chosen people. So I can agree with that. And then his next principle is looking outward, which just means the church should be going out into the local communities, providing services that are needed there. And looking inward is to understand God's grace in your own life, to accept it, to embrace it, so that then you're able to give it out to other people. So with these principles in mind, I decided to try to understand the difference a little bit more between the traditional and alternative worship. And I decided to go out into some of these services. Now, I labeled this slide, Come Now Let Us Reason Together, because this is kind of one of my foundational ways I interact with God. I don't see God as a dictator, but more of a conversation partner. So with what I had learned so far and in prayer, I went out into these different communities just to see what I could learn. So I visited 6 different churches. I had a spiritual direction retreat, and then another event that I was supposed to go to, but I never quite made it there because of weather, so I just kind of talked to that leader a little bit more about what they do. And I had several conversations with different people too, people that varied in from having attended churches, still attending churches, no longer attending churches, actively participant in the church, even to the leadership level, and now separated from the church. So some of the themes I was seeing is that the alternative worship service that they attended in these sacred spaces were still the same restrictive theology, just in a shinier packaging, and that the theology was still a lack of relevance to their daily lives. There was no like saying, how does it actually connect today? And they found it kind of empty and lukewarm. Also that it, in some cases, it was kind of cumbersome and dense. So another person said that they found that when they were at church, after the service ended on Sunday morning, the church ended as well, whereas to her, church was the people that should go out during the week as well, and she just wasn't getting that. So after a while, it just seemed kind of not sustaining and enlivening to her, because kind of hypocritical, I guess, is the right word. I was trying to be nice. The other thing was the doctrines, especially around women. Because here they were worshiping, they were allowed to be in certain positions if the titles were changed so that they could be in those positions. So they just looked at that as like spiritual linguistics and seemed just really inauthentic. So after a while, they just didn't even want to be there anymore. And then lastly, just wanting to feel like they were included, like they mattered. The 5 churches, from the actual churches that I visited, 5 churches, a spiritual retreat, and a prison. So one of the churches I visited was very much rooted in their traditional theology. They marketed themselves as an offshoot of that particular denomination. Although they were meeting in a non-traditional space and they had some worship arts and so forth, there was very good energy around the preaching. There was coffee, there was baked goods available, very relaxed feel, very welcoming when I walked in. You know, everybody was very friendly and so forth. But I still couldn't quite connect with it. 2 of them were very traditional denominations, but one was one ethnicity and the other one was a different ethnicity. And there I found that basically the people were all the same in, you know, this ethnicity and all the same in this one, and they all dressed alike, looked alike, and seemed very similar as far as education, socioeconomic, and so forth. As they were following their liturgy or litany, whichever one it is, I just felt like, okay, everything was right there scripted. I could just take it and read it. You know, why did I even have to be there? Didn't quite connect with me, but it looked like maybe it was connecting with some other people. I wasn't sure. And then I had two that were kind of more of a house church feel. They had more of a spiritual direction style to it, where there were worship arts and there was a definite time to go and engage in these different activities. And I connected more with that, but it's still, sometimes the worship arts and the other stuff almost seemed like a distraction to me. And then the next place I went to was the spiritual retreat. And that actually, I connected more with that because there was this intentional focus on an encounter with God. But it still kind of felt a little bit like, okay, now I have to focus on this, you know. And the other place I went was to a men's prison. It was very interesting in this location because there were no frills, very little worship arts. They had like a sign up on a wall that said Jesus. They had a paper-made cross that was taped upon the wall. They're in prison, so they don't get, you know, all the different supplies and access to stuff that we get. And they have a very limited time to get in there, do their worship service, and leave. And it was just interesting because from the moment they started getting into small groups to pray, as soon as they came in, they just immediately would like start forming groups to pray for the service. And the whole atmosphere just changed. And as they sang songs, contemporary and traditional songs, I can't even explain it because it's like I encountered God. I didn't have to work for it. I didn't have to try to focus on it. It just felt natural. And it just made me then ask, what made this different? Because I couldn't see them trying to do anything, yet it happened. So, after all of this, now some suggestions then, where do we go from here? How do we try to reach out more to the nones, to draw them in? Some suggestions was with the teaching versus preaching. Take more time, explain what's actually going on. The formational versus informational, they kind of go together. Instead of just reading things over, you know, whatever the words are you're supposed to say, explain why those words are being said. What's the history behind this tradition? Why does it matter, you know? It just made me kind of think about, like, when I first came to seminary, I started hearing words like eschatology and the eschaton, and people were using these words, and I said, okay, well, maybe they know what they mean, you know? And I was like, I didn't know because I had never heard stuff like that, and liturgy and litany. I'm still trying to keep those two separate, but at least I went and I had to do some research on what eschatology was and so forth, and I finally kind of got it. And I just remember wishing that when I came to seminary, there had been like a seminary dictionary that I could have had, you know, would have made things so much easier. And when I was in the church, some of the traditional services, I kind of wondered if that would have been helpful there too, to kind of have a handbook of this is what's being done in the churches so you can kind of follow along. The other one was the functional approach versus spiritual approach. What this is basically asking why we do everything we do in church. What is the outcome that we're looking for? The functional approach, is it just to keep tradition alive? Or the spiritual approach, is it to help each person engage with the Spirit and to see how the Spirit is acting in and through their life? The other one was the multisensory. This here is to engage them on different levels using virtual. Basically, they're saying that especially the millennials who grew up with technology and they grew up with so much virtual reality that they can get anything they want on the internet, but it's not really real. So that when they go to church, they want something real. They said engage them with touch, taste, smell, hearing, So, you know, if you have to use big screen TVs, if you have to use the worship arts, if you have to use whatever, give them something real now because they're so used to this virtual stuff. So what they're kind of saying is be adaptive, but not lose the fullness of the theology. Somebody else said learning webs, which what that means is that instead of encouraging lifelong memberships into a particular denomination, allow them to go to this church, learn what they need, go to the next one, learn what they need. Remove that stigma that, you know, that you're not really a Christian if you're constantly church hopping. But kind of look at it kind of like bees that go around and pollinate flowers. Sometimes they're feeding, sometimes they're being fed. And just learn to, you know, accept serving wherever you are, because if you stay in one place, you're only going to grow as much as that place is. And after a while, it becomes stagnant and it becomes ritual. So after all this, I was left with more questions, actually, than answers. You know, I was still wondering, I looked at some pictures of different alternative worship spaces, round tables, softer chairs, TV screens, dim lighting, coffee bars, whatever. And I wondered, do we really need all of that to encounter God? I mean, I like all that stuff, I can appreciate it, but I kept remembering the prison where I truly encountered God and they didn't have any of that. And at the end of all of this, while I can still respect mainline traditions, I still don't quite feel connected to them, but I'm still not sure that the nuns have the answer for me either. And the most important thing is I still didn't find the ministry path, but at least I'm encouraged because I do believe that worship of God and ministry is every day, every hour, every aspect of life. And I can think more outside the box and just run with it. And I also know that one day we will not worship on this mountain or in that building or with these symbols, but we will worship God in spirit and truth. Thank you.